So we will continue with our discussion of the first verse and purport of the Trishloki Gita, chapter 15, text 16, 17, and 18. You'll recall yesterday that the theme was two kinds of living entities whose nature is described in Bhagavad Gita as the nature of Brahma or spirit. But one is kshara or conditioned, fallible. The other is akshara in his natural transcendental state. So we explained, looking at the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada's purport and verses and statements from Srila Prabhupada which expand the understanding of his purport, that conditioning means that the consciousness of the living entity is subject to the influence of the three modes of material nature. Generated from out of the three modes of material nature are, well, the whole material world. Everything we know to be material existence arises from these three modes. That is explained, in, as we mentioned yesterday, in many places in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's these three modes that keep the living entity trapped. Even if he tries to perform religious activity, karma, jnana, even bhakti, he remains conditioned, he remains bound. So, but at the same time, Lord Krishna has produced, using these three modes of nature, which are, after all, his energy, he has produced within this world a social system called Varnashram, Varnashrama Dharma. This social system is meant to help the living entity, the fallible living entity, Kshara Purush, become pious. And we mentioned that in this world there are two kinds of fallible living entities, pious and impious. So the pious living entities are those who have the tendency to turn to Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. Understandably, because they're still in the fallible state, their motivation for turning to Krishna is not pure. So there are four kinds of pious living entities who turn to Krishna. Those who are distressed, those who are in search, in need of money, those who are curious, jigyashu, and those who are actually aspiring for real knowledge. And Krishna says of the four, the one who is looking for real knowledge, he is the best. That is again the endeavor of the Vedanta, Brahma Mimamsa, inquiry into transcendental knowledge. So one who comes to that stage of inquiry into the Vedic teachings, he's considered by Krishna to be the best. And of course, those who do not surrender to Krishna, those who avoid surrendering to Krishna, even though they may be also within the Varnashram Dharma system, they're classified as impious. There are four kinds of impious human beings. Those who are, they're all called duskritina. Kritina means they're capable of pious activity. They're, in other words, they're capable of functioning within such a social system as Varnashram Dharma. That's the sense of kritina. It's actually, krita is actually a word that's related to karma. It means activity. But dush, when you put dush in front, it means all bad. So, therefore, mudha, they are those who are foolish as the asses. For instance, someone in the shudra category who has no piety, then we call him mudha. He's like an ass, just a worker with no sense of the real value of life. Naradama means the lowest among men. They have some sort of culture, some sort of sophistication about them, but it is also useless. materialistic, impious. Then the Maya Pratigyana, those who seem to be knowledgeable, have education, but it's all stolen by illusion. And then finally, Asuras, the demons who directly decry, who are completely opposed to any idea that there is a supreme controller. So these are explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And then, yes, we went on to say that, point out from Srila Prabhupada's purport, oneness does not mean they have no individuality, but that there is no disunity. They are all agreeable to the purpose of creation. So this is where we left off yesterday, on this point, from the purport of 15:16. The purpose of creation, as was pointed out yesterday, is sacrifice. So those who engage in Vedic sacrifice, they become pious. They ascend to the pious category. So they have the opportunity to surrender to Krishna. But Vedic sacrifice, as explained in this Bhagavad Gita verse 2:45, Vedic sacrifice, which is still under the influence of the three modes of material nature, and that means that there is some aim at sense gratification, then that process of sacrifice remains in the fallible category. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains exactly what that means by saying how those who perform Vedic sacrifices, they may rise up to the heavenly planets, they have opportunity to drink soma rasa and stay there for so long, but eventually they will fall back down again. So that's the meaning of the word fallible, that they will fall again. So to come to the infallible state, Sri Krishna says, O Arjuna, become transcendental to these modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. So this is an important point. Be free from all dualities. The symptom of conditioning upon living entity's consciousness of the three modes of material nature, the very symptom is duality. And that, since we're speaking of the essence of Bhagavad Gita, that is a very prominent subject matter in the Gita. Duality, how it affects our consciousness. There are so many verses about this. Heat, cold, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, raga, attraction, dvesha, hatred. Krishna sums it up by that famous verse, Icha dvesha shamutena dvanva mohena bharata. O son of Bharata, all living entities in this material world are born into duality. That duality is Icha, attraction, and dvesha, hatred. So someone who engages in, even in the process of Vedic Yajna, if his mind is still under the control of duality, then his efforts will still remain fallible. So one has to rise above this duality. And this duality also is referring to the process of the repeated birth and death. There's a verse in the 13th chapter, text 22. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. Sadasa juni janmashu. Very important point. Sad means good, ashad means evil. So according to one's activities, one is either entering good birth in the next life or evil, or also mixed. So this good, sattvic, mixed, rajasic, evil, tamasic. So one has to rise above these dualities. Now how to do this? So this means that the process of Vedic sacrifice, first one has become pious by engaging in the process of Vedic sacrifice. Therefore he's agreeable to Krishna's purpose of creation. But as Krishna says, one has to rise up out of the conditioning influence of the three modes, out of duality. So now we're going to refer you to some quotes from Srila Prabhupada's purports in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. These are taken out of the purports to text 23, 26, and 27. I'll just read them. This is very interesting. Srila Prabhupada begins talking about the three modes of material nature. It has been explained that penance, sacrifice, charity, and foods are divided into three categories: the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. But whether first class, second class, or third class, they are all conditioned, contaminated by the material modes of nature. When they are aimed at the Supreme, Om Tat Sat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Eternal, they become means for spiritual elevation. So I'll just make a short comment here, that what Srila Prabhupada is pointing out here is a process of transformation. That penance, sacrifice, charity, and even the foods we eat, actually all experience that one can have in this material world, it arises from the combination of the three modes. We explained that yesterday, giving the comparison of the primary colors mixing. So every experience possible in this material world arises from the three modes, and as Prabhupada says, they are contaminated. But if we aim our activities under these three modes at the Supreme, then these same things become objects, become means for spiritual elevation. So this is a transformation. So to continue, these three words, that means Om Tat Sat, are taken from Vedic hymns. Om Iti Etad Brahmano Nirishtam Nama from the Rig Veda indicates the first goal. Then, Tat Tvamasi from the Chandogya Upanishad indicates the second goal, and Sad Eva Somya indicates the third goal. Combined, they become Om Tat Sat. Formerly, when Brahma, the first created living entity, performed sacrifices, he indicated by these three words the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, three goals. Now, we have explained at the beginning of yesterday's class that these three verses are aimed at Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So these are three goals. Also, we explained how Prabhupada says that Vedanta, which is the subject matter of these three verses, are, what are the subjects? Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. These are the three goals or the three subject matters of all Vedic literature. So Prabhupada goes on writing, all such activities, it is recommended that one vibrate Om Tat Sat. Each of these indicates the three goals. The word sadbhave and sadubhave indicate the transcendental situation. That means sambandha. Acting in Krishna consciousness is called sattva. So this acting in Krishna consciousness, that is what? Abhideya. And one who is fully conscious of the activities of Krishna consciousness is called a sadhu. So that full consciousness of the activities of devotional service on the transcendental plane, that is the prayojana. So, I've read these sections of these purports because they are very deep and hard to understand. When devotees read them, often they just sort of skim over them because it's all presented in Vedic terminology, which is difficult for our minds to penetrate into because that's not our cultural background. But the actual concluding point is very simple. And it is the message of Krishna to Bhagavad Gita, that a pious person should perform sacrifice. And that person transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the Brahman platform. If he performs these sacrifices solely and wholly for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, these three goals indicating that his sacrifices are meant only for connecting himself to the Supreme Lord, serving the Supreme Lord, and finally developing love of the Supreme Lord. So, now to agree to the purpose of creation, one should know the source. From where does this creation arise? That is the fundamental inquiry of Vedanta. So continuing on in this purport, chapter 15, text 16, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Of course, in the spiritual world, there is no such thing as creation. But since the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Vedanta Sutra, is the source of all emanations, that conception is explained." Now, to elaborate on this, I'm simply going to read some quotes from Srila Prabhupada. And they're very, very interesting. In these quotes, there's four of them. Srila Prabhupada is compressing all the difficult philosophy of Vedanta into very easily understandable tidbits. So we will read them. First one. On account of Krishna's bodily rays, the whole creation is coming out. That is Krishna's inconceivable power, Brahma Jyoti. Janmadyasya yataha. You're familiar with that? Janmadyasya yataha. Where is that from?
From
Vedanta Sutra. And what does it mean? Yes. So Brahman, the absolute truth, how is it defined as the source of everything? So Janmadyasya yataha atato brahma jignasya. In the Vedanta Sutra, you have to inquire about that Param Jyoti, Brahma Jyoti. And from that Param Jyoti, everything is coming out. Everything is coming out means the three modes of material nature are coming out. So Vedanta inquiry, first of all, means into this Param Jyoti or Brahma Jyoti or Brahman, impersonal Brahman, from out of which the three modes of material nature are coming. Mm-hmm.
This Brahman, which is referred to as Janman, is not in person, because it is that from which everything emanates.
Yeah, but this is the first stage. I haven't yet finished reading the quotes here. It will take you right to the conclusion. But you see, this, when we speak of Vedanta philosophy is, being philosophy, it is systematic, step by step. So first of all, they look at this Brahma Jyoti, Param Jyoti, the light. You see, that's why many Vedantas, they're impersonalists, because they've only got that far. Uh-huh. So they can understand, as it is explained, for instance, in the Brahma Samhita, there's a verse there, which explains how out of this light, everything is coming, all the universes, all the manifest worlds are appearing out of that light. So the Brahmavadis, those who are, whose understanding of the Supreme Lord has only come up to the level of impersonal Brahman understanding, this is how they perceive the source of everything, that manifestation comes out of impersonal oneness. But it doesn't stop there. That is not the end. Every planetary system, there are many millions and trillions of living entities. They can see only when there is sunrise. This Gayatri mantra is therefore offering prayer to the Savita. Savita means sunshine. Om Bhur Bhuva Svatat Savato Vranyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi. Sunshine. So sunshine is, but there are many suns. Not only one sun, as there are many universes. Yasya prabha pravado jagananda koti. This is from Brahma Samhita. Koti means innumerable, numberless universes. And in each and every universe there is sunshine. So this sunshine is a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. Yasya prabha pravavato. When the bodily rays, shining rays of Krishna is there, then all these universes are generated. The universes are also generated. So, those who are brahmanas, those who are second initiated, they chant the Gayatri mantra according to the phases of the sun in the sky. Sunrise, then when the sun is high in the sky, and at sunset. But this is not a, when the word savita is used, that one is offering one's prayers to the sun, to the effulgence of the sun. It does not actually mean simply the material rays of the sun. But the understanding is that the rays of sunshine are reflections of the rays of Krishna's transcendental body, the Brahma Jyoti. So this is an example. This is We have to look at these things very deeply. Before we have read from Srila Prabhupada how everything that we experience in this material world, which is produced out of the three modes of material nature, can, when they're aimed at the Supreme Lord, in the service of the Supreme Lord in sacrifice, then they become means of elevation. This is an example. When the brahmanas chant the Gayatri mantra, meditating upon the sunshine. The understanding is, it is the sunshine is what? It is a reflection of Krishna's bodily rays. So by seeing that light of the sun in this way, one becomes spiritually elevated. That is the whole point of the Gayatri mantra. At least the first. This Brahma Gayatri mantra means the first line of Gayatri. In the Vaishnava Sampradaya, there are other Gayatri mantras given for further service to Krishna, Guru Krishna. So Vedanta says also, Janmadyasya Yataha, Brahma, Paramatma, they are expansion of Krishna. Krishna is the original. Mata paratram nanyat kichit asti dananjaya. This is the truth. Therefore Krishna says that either you follow the Brahman path or Paramatma path, either as jnani or yogi or as a bhakta. Therefore Krishna says, Mama Vartmanu Vartante Manushan Parta. Anyone who is seeking after self-realization, there are three divisions. Either you have to realize as impersonal Brahman, or as localized Paramatma, or as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if you realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically you realize impersonal Brahman and Paramatma also. And then last of all, Srila Prabhupada writes, so Krishna is not nirvishesha, he is savishesha. So the word vishesha means quality. So Krishna is not a being devoid of qualities. He is full of all qualities. But this material world is actually nirvishesha. But it appears something like varieties. The same thing, the example I have already given. A lump of matter, either you take earth or water or gold or silver, and you can make many varieties of things, cause and effect. But that is nirvishesha. But the spiritual world, janmadyasya yataha, as it is said in the Vedanta Sutra, the origin of everything, the cause of all causes, that is full of spiritual varieties, that is not nirvishesha. So this is a very nice point, that it is this material world which is actually devoid of real qualities, because it is only a reflection. And Prabhupada gives nice proof that the material world, you can trace back the causes and effects. He gives some examples, like gold ring. So gold ring looks like vishesha, something with quality, but it can be, you can trace it back to its source, a lump of gold, which comes from the mine, which is in the earth. And then the earth, where does the earth come from? It comes from water. Where does the water come from? The water comes out of fire. Where does fire come from? The fire comes out of air. Where does air come from? Out of ether. Where does ether come from? From out of subtle sound vibration. And then by the time you've got to the subtle sound vibration, there's no more material elements. You see, it's nirvishesha. It is the sound om. Then you've come to the impersonal platform. So this material world is actually the nirvishesha. So therefore we call those persons who are interested only in this, mayavadis. Because they're only interested in the illusory features of material existence, which actually have no reality. So then, but this reflection, it has its origin in the perfection, which is savishesha, which is actually full of all qualities, and these are transcendental qualities. So in the material world there are three modes, so in the spiritual world, as explained by Lord Chaitanya, there are also three, we could use the term modes, or three features of the absolute existence, three shaktis of the Lord. Samvid, Sandini, Ladini. This is a very high philosophy from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't want to go into it extensively. But anyway, Samvid means the knowledge potency. Sandini means the existence potency. Samvid, knowledge potency. And Ladini, pleasure potency. So these are the three shaktis which comprise the whole spiritual world. Krishna's energies, spiritual energies, they combine and the spiritual world is there in all of its qualities. So this is all indicated by the words Om Tat Sat in the Bhagavad Gita. So going on, because I want to try to finish this Tri Shloki today, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, as long as the living entity is conditioned, his bodily changes due to contact with matter. Matter is changing, so the living entity appears to be changing. But in the spiritual world, the body is not made of matter. Therefore, there is no change. In the material world, the living entity undergoes six changes: birth, growth, duration, reproduction, then dwindling and vanishing. These are the changes of the material body. But in the spiritual world, the body does not change. There is no old age. There is no birth. There is no death. There all exists in oneness. Now this oneness again means there's no duality. There's no duality as we experience in this material world, which is the result of the consciousness becoming perverted by the three modes of material nature. Although we are all parts and parcels of Krishna, as Jiva, we all belong to the spiritual world. We have a big problem in understanding our own nature. We have a big problem in understanding our eternal relationship with Krishna. And our big problem is that our senses are not controlled. Now this is another purpose of sacrifice. The purpose of sacrifice, as explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in many places, is to engage the senses in the service of the Absolute and in this way bring them under control. So when the senses come under the control of the Supreme Lord through devotional service, then only can the living entity understand the Lord. Actually, the Lord reveals himself through the process of sacrifice. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. And in another place, second chapter, text 69, Sri Krishna speaks, what is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So, in other words, the point being made here is that one who is self-controlled, whose senses are engaged in the service of the Lord only, he views this material world completely differently. It's like day and night, as compared to those whose senses are not under control. So, to become restored to our original transcendental nature, it ultimately means that one has to realize Krishna's transcendental form. In Bhagavad Gita 11:51, Arjuna says, O Janardana, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind and I am restored to my original nature. In this 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna reveals his universal form. He reveals how he is the origin of this cosmos. He shows his intense blinding rays of Brahma Jyoti. He shows his four-armed feature, Chaturbhuj feature of Narayan, Vishnu. And finally, what does Arjuna ask Krishna? Now please show me your original form with two hands. And when Krishna reveals this form, then Arjuna quotes, he speaks this verse. Seeing this form, Tava Somyam Janardana, which is so beautiful. Beautiful means that Krishna is the origin of all qualities, which emanate from him in absolute perfection, which later on become, these same qualities become perverted in the material world, pervertedly reflected here. So seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind, and I am restored to my original nature. So this infallible abode, which is the goal of Vedanta, that is Krishna Loka. Bhagavad Gita 8:21, that which the Vedantists describe is unmanifest and infallible, That which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. So, now, try to go on. Bhagavad Gita 15:17. Uttama purushastvanya paramatmeti udarita salokatrayam avishya vibharti avya ishvara. So besides these two means the kshara and akshara purushas, the living entities, those who are conditioned and those who are liberated. There is the greatest living personality, the supreme soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. So, we'll look at Srila Prabhupada's purport, not in its entirety, we'll just select some statements from it. So from the purport, the Upanishadic verse runs as follows, Nityo Nityananam Chaitanas Chaitananam. The purport is that amongst all the living entities, both conditioned and liberated, there is one supreme living personality, the supreme personality according to different work. So this is referring to Paramatma, the Lord, the all-pervading Lord, who is the Lord of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Paramatma is Krishna as the Lord of sacrifice. So here's a note. The conditioned souls depend upon the all-pervading Lord for their material necessities. And they approach him through the Shruti, the Vedic sacrificial mantras. Whereas the liberated souls, those who are Akshara, they depend upon Lord Paramatma for transcendental knowledge. And they approach him through purified consciousness. So there's some a very interesting quote here from the Uddhava Gita. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the Uddhava Gita, which is spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, which contains the same subject matter as Bhagavad Gita, but in it is greatly expanded. So the Lord says, "My dear Uddhava, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart, along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Lord can be perceived in his subtle form within the heart by one's mind, since the Lord controls the minds of everyone, even great demigods like Lord Shiva. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations."
What's
that from? This is from the Uddhava Gita, that's 11th. Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 12, text 17. So, what is being indicated here is two ways of understanding Paramatma. One is through introspection, by jnana, by yoga, purifying the consciousness through meditation. And the other way is for those who have an interest in enjoying the material world, but who submit to the Vedic directions, then the Paramatma can be perceived through the Vedic sound vibrations. By hearing these Vedic sound vibrations, for instance, the Rig Veda, there's the Purusha Shukta prayers. This is an address to the Paramatma in his feature of the universal form. So in this way, one can also become conscious of the Paramatma. And Sri Krishna speaks of this too in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, verses 15 and 16. He's speaking of others, anye. Anye means... we have to look at this verse from the 13th chapter, 25 and 26. Some perceive the super soul within themselves through meditation. Others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruitive desires. Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about Him from others. Shrutvanyeva upasate. So the Shrutvanyeva, this is referring to the Shruti, the Vedic mantras. So these people may be ignorant, they may not be transcendentalists, they may not be very introspective, Vedantists, Jnanis, Yogis. But they do have this one tendency, to hear the Vedic sound vibration from authorities, from Guru. So by this they can also, because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of death, birth and death. So that all-pervading Lord who is worshipped through the sacrifice of two basic kinds, either sacrifice of knowledge or sacrifice of material things by hearing the Vedas, that all-pervading Lord is none other than Sri Krishna himself. So Krishna says, others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge, others means those who are not my devotees, not directly my bhaktas. So they engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge. They worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many, as the universal form. Then Krishna says, but it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, I the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. So this is Krishna speaking frankly to Arjuna on the chariot. They're looking for me, he's saying. Yeah, this is chapter 9, text 15 and 16. Krishna is telling Arjuna, all they're doing in all of their rituals, all of their philosophical introspection, is looking for me who am standing here with you. And the feature that they can attain by all this is the Paramatma feature, Krishna as the Lord of Sacrifice. So going on with Srila Prabhupada's purport, that Supreme Personality of God, it is situated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. A wise man who can understand him is eligible to attain perfect peace, not others. So that Paramatma, he's the Lord of Sacrifice, who is known as Jagya. This is the name of Krishna in this feature, Jagya. He is the goal of the Vedas. Both matter and spirit are his energies. Those who know this can attain perfect peace. So we know a verse from Bhagavad Gita 5:29. You probably all know this verse. You know it? The last verse of the fifth chapter. Where Krishna says the peace formula. Yes. So a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices. Here's the point. All sacrifices and austerities. The Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, from whom the planets come. We've heard about that before. How the planets arise out of the Jyoti. And the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, he attains peace from the pangs of all material miseries. In the eighth chapter, texts 2, 3, and 4, Arjuna actually asks about this Lord of Sacrifice. He asks, who is the Lord of Sacrifice? And how does he live in the body, O Madhusudana? The Supreme Personality of God had said, the indestructible transcendental living entity is called Brahman, that we mentioned yesterday, Aksharam Brahma Paramam. And its eternal nature is called Adhyatma, the Self. Actions pertaining to the development of the material bodies of the living entity is called karma, or fruitive activities. O best of the embodied beings, the physical nature, which is constantly changing, is called Adibhuta, the material manifestation. The universal form of the Lord, which includes all the demigods, like those of the sun and the moon, is called Adidaiva. And I, the Supreme Lord, represented as the supersoul in the heart of every embodied being, am called the Adijagya, the Lord of Sacrifice. So these three verses, they're actually summing up more or less everything that we've talked about until now, up to the point of Paramatma realization. So now we can go on.
You're actually saying Yagya. You're saying Yagya, you just pronounced Jagya. Yagya.
Yes.
Sacrifice.
That is the name of the Lord in the heart, the Lord of Sacrifice. So we can go on and read the next verse, text 17, in which Sri Krishna is speaking of his supreme original feature, Bhagavan. Uttama Purushashtvanya paramatmeti udarita. Yoloka trayam avisha vibharti avya ishvara. Sorry. Oh. That's not the verse. We want to go to text 18 now. Tasmat charamatitoham aksharada pichottama atosmi loke vedicha pratita purushottamaha. Because I am transcendental, beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that supreme person. Prabhupada writes in the purport, now it is clear here that the living entities and the supreme personality of Godhead are individuals. So this theme of individuality is very much stressed in the Bhagavad Gita. I'll give you some references. This is a famous one that Srila Prabhupada points out in his purport from the fourth chapter, text 5. The Supreme Personality of God had said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So, Sri Krishna is telling Arjuna, both you and I have appeared in this world many, many times. I am different from you because I can remember them. You cannot. So this is a clear indication of individuality. And here's another from Bhagavad Gita 13:23. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the supersoul. And then another, from the 28th verse of the same chapter. One who sees the supersoul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the supersoul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. So all of these verses, and there are others too, other very important verses in the Gita, which are expressing this underlying theme of the Gita, of individuality, of the Lord and the living entities. So the difference between the Lord and the living entities is now explained by Prabhupada in his purport. The difference is that the living entities, either in the conditioned state or in the liberated state, cannot surpass in quantity the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I can refer you to a statement by Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, texts 12 to 15. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages, these are liberated souls, akshara. They are all akshara purusha. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala and Vyas confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. O Krishna, I totally accept all that you have told me, neither the demigods nor the demons. This is another way of saying infallible, demigods, demons, fallible. Neither the demigods or demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency, O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. And then there's another verse by Arjuna in 11:36. O Master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings, the siddhas, again, the liberated beings, offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid, and they run here and there. All this is rightly done. Now, come to a very interesting point from the purport. The word loke signifies, in the Parusha Agama, the Smriti scriptures, as confirmed in the Nirukti dictionary, lokayate vedartha nyena. The purpose of the Vedas is explained by the Smriti scriptures. So I'll read this note. The Parusha Agama are scriptures such as the Vaishnava Puranas that directly describe the Purusha, the Supreme Person, as the Lord of Sacrifice. Srila Vyasadeva extracted the Parusha Agama from the original Yajurveda, so that these scriptures could be specially chanted during sacrificial offerings. They are known as smriti. Smriti means that which is to be remembered, because they help the priests engaged in sacrifice, remember the Lord to whom they make the offerings. So, I can just read a quote from Vayu Purana, which explains the origin of this Purusha Agama. Originally, there was only one Veda, the Yajur Veda. Vyas divided that single Veda into four. And he also divided the sacrificial duties, so that the Vedic sacrifices were conducted by not one, but four priests. Vyasa assigned the text of the Yajur Veda to be recited by the priest known as the Advaryu. In the same way, the Hota priest recited the Rig Veda, the Udgata priest recited the Sama Veda, and the Brahma priest recited the Atharva Veda. O best of the Brahmanas at that time, Vyasadeva, who perfectly understood the accounts of the Puranas, took the stories, conversations, and poems of that original Yajurveda and compiled the Puranas and histories. Therefore, the Puranas and histories are parts of the original Yajurveda.
Where is this quote taken from?
This is from Vayu Purana. And then in the Mahabharata, there's this statement, Itihasa Purana Bhyam Vedam Samupabrimhayat Vibityalpa Shuta Devedo Mamamyam Pariharshati, which means whoever approaches the Vedas without first studying the Smriti, the Itihasas and Puranas, frightens Vedic knowledge away. So, now this is, I presented all this, which is a little technical, simply to bring you to this point of understanding that in these Vedic sacrifices, they're very complex and the priests have to be highly qualified and so many mantras are chanted. But the real point of the whole thing is just to remember Krishna. So therefore, as described here, to help the priest remember Krishna, Srila Vyasadeva here extracted this Purusha Agama. The Agama means the scriptures that directly describe the Purusha, the Supreme Lord. And they were to be chanted during the sacrifice so that the priests would know to whom they're making the offerings. So that's the whole point. It's all very complex. But this is one of the basic themes of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is saying, just remember me. So in these three verses, of course, this is all Vedanta, so it's all couched in very technical language, all referring to the Vedas and Vedic sacrifice. But you see at the bottom of it, this point is being made. But the conclusion is just remember Krishna. So, read another quote from the Satvata Tantra. Only those who have faith in devotional service, bhakti nishta, understand the Purusha Agama. Purusha Agama, this means, also this would include Srimad Bhagavatam, but it refers to the Vaishnava Puranas. Also the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, works that directly describe the glories of the Supreme Lord. They know, these persons who have faith and devotional service, bhakti nishta, they know that Sri Krishna, who is the form of pure goodness and who resides in the spiritual world served by his devotees, is the Supreme Absolute Truth. But those who have faith in speculation, jnana nishta, follow the Upanishads. They say the highest truth is the impersonal Brahman. And those who are karma parama, devoted to pious deeds, follow the three Vedas. They say that the super soul, Hiranyagarbha, is the highest truth. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says, learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So learned transcendentalists means there are some who are karma nishta, who have faith in the activities prescribed in the three Vedas. They are worshippers of the Paramatma, Super Soul. They are those who are Jnana Nishta, who have faith in speculation and want to attain the impersonal Brahman. So they understand the same non-dual substance, Brahman, as being Brahma Jyoti. And those transcendentalists who are devotees, who relish to hear about Krishna, they know the Bhagavan feature of the Supreme Lord. So, I think we've already read Srila Prabhupada's statement that one who knows Bhagavan feature, he automatically knows Paramatma and Brahman. And the Acharyas have written in their commentary that it is like light, lamp, and fire, these three features of the Absolute Truth. In one sense, they are the same. Light, so light, what is it? It is the same as fire, the same quality. And lamp, lamp means just like a ghee lamp. There's a little flame, a little flame. So you see fire and light. But in the great fire, say the fire in the fireplace, fire in the furnace, the great fire, you see the origin of both, isn't it? You see the origin of both, the light and even the flame in the lamp. And you light the flame in the lamp from a greater fire, some source of fire. So the Acharyas have pointed out, now in one sense they're all the same. But if one is cold, if it's a cold day, do you get relief from the cold by turning on the light? You can say, well, the light is the same as the fire. But if it's a cold day, that light won't help you get warm. So you have to go to the fire. So one may think, all right, I'll go to the fire. There's a little ghee lamp there. It's come down from the altar, from the arti. So I'll stand next to that and get warm because fire gives heat. But on a cold day, standing next to such a lamp won't warm you up very much either. You have to go to the great fire, the original fire, Krishna. And then that... this is actually the 100% deliverance from material existence by taking shelter of Krishna himself. The Paramatma and Brahman features, Prabhupada says, are partial aspects of the Absolute Truth. So partial means that even though one may have realized these aspects, which are in one sense one with Krishna himself, still there is the chance of falling down again. But if we...
Exactly,
yes?
Which refers to which Paramatma, to the light?
Or light. No, Brahman is the light, Paramatma is the lamp, because Paramatma is called localized feature. You're already there. We started late. This class always starts late. Paramatma means localized feature. So it's just like that. You may have a great fire in the furnace somewhere like that. So you can localize that fire by going with a ghee lamp and lighting it there and putting it anywhere you like. But still, that little localized fire will make you warm. So now we come to another very interesting... I think we can finish up this section today if we move quickly. Although this last part I want to look at is very esoteric. This is Prabhupada's purport. I'm sure this is one of those sections of Prabhupada's purport which you just sort of look at and scratch your head. The following verse appears in the Vedas, Chandogya Upanishad. Tava resa samprasado mach charirat samutaya param jyotim sampadya svena rupena binishpadyate sa uttama purusha. Which means, the supersoul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Then in his form he remains in his spiritual identity. That Supreme is called the Supreme Personality. And Prabhupada writes, this means that the Supreme Personality is exhibiting and diffusing his spiritual effulgence, which is the ultimate illumination. That Supreme Personality has also a localized aspect as Paramatma. By incarnating himself as a son of Satyavati and Parashara, he explains the Vedic knowledge as Vyasadeva. So, one point being made here, of course, is that Krishna's form, Krishna's personal form, is the basis of Brahma Jyoti. There's the famous verse from chapter 14, text 27. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I am the basis of impersonal Brahman, which explains that. Now,
so
what
what's that reference again?
Chapter 14, text 27. Now, this quote from the Chandogya Upanishad. The supersoul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, then in his form he remains in his spiritual identity. That supreme is called the Supreme Personality. That quote appears in Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, the Govinda Bhasya, in its entirety. So, the translation that I have of this quote is a bit different from Srila Prabhupada's. Srila Prabhupada is just quoting the first line or so. It's a bit different, but I'll show you in the end that there's no contradiction. But even this bit different translation is very interesting. So I'll read it. He through whose grace this released soul, arising from his last body, and having approached the highest light, is restored to his own form, is the highest person, Uttama Purusha. Now I have to explain that. It's in this sentence that you see the difference. Because in this translation, the he, the subject of the sentence, is not the super soul. It's not the super soul coming out of the body and entering the light, but it is the living entity. And the point being made here is through the grace of the Uttama Purusha, the Supreme Soul, that he arises from his last body and approaches the Param Jyoti, the highest light, and then is restored to his own form. Now, this is Chandogya Upanishad. This is a very wonderful shloka. And the mukta means that liberated soul, moves about there in the liberated state. This is a verse that completely wipes out all impersonalism. And it's from the Upanishads, which the impersonalists like very much. The mukta moves about there, laughing, playing, and rejoicing, with women, with carriages, with other muktas of his own period or of the past kalpas. So great is his ecstasy that he does not remember even the person standing next to him, nor even his own body. And as a charioteer is appointed by his master to drive the carriage, so, just so, the prana is appointed to drive this chariot of the body. So anyway, the point being made here is that the state attained by the mukta is not impersonal. It describes he is laughing, playing, and rejoicing. So now, so this is understandable, but how does that correspond with Srila Prabhupada's translation? Srila Prabhupada is saying that this being that rises from the body and enters the light is the super soul. So there is this quote from the Satvata Tantra, which is Gaudiya Vaishnava Shastra. Virat dehe yad avasad bhagavan pura samgyake atap purusha namanam avapa purusha para. Because he resides, Usha, he resides, Usha, in the home, pur, of the Virata Deha, cosmic body of the universal form. The Supreme Lord is called Purusha. So in other words, the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Super Soul, he has his own body. And that's this universal form, the Virat, the universal cosmic sphere. This is considered to be his body. And this Virat Rupa, it also dies or is destroyed, put it that way. It dissolves. So at that time, the Paramatma, he withdraws into the existence of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu becomes one again with Mahavishnu, who is the origin of the other two Purusha features. So, and in this way they pass through the effulgence of the Mahapurusha, the Mahavishnu, and become one with him again. So therefore, there is no contradiction. Just as the jiva leaves the physical body and passes through the Brahmajyoti on his way back to the abode of the Supreme Lord at the time of liberation, so the Uttama Purusha, Super Soul, leaves the universe at the end of the cosmic manifestation and passes through the Brahmajyoti to return to Mahavishnu, the source of the Garbhadakshaya and Chirodakshaya Purusha avatar expansions. So to finish up this Tri Shloki, Gita. I have gotten from this Uddhava Gita 9 verses. This is from the 11th canto, chapter 11, text 1 to 9, which very nicely elaborates on the same subject that is explained in these three verses. So Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, "My dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated. And since I am the Supreme Lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I also am never to be considered liberated or in bondage. Just as a dream is merely a creation of one's intelligence, but has no actual substance, similarly, material lamentation, illusion, happiness, distress, and the acceptance of the material body under the influence of Maya are all creations of my illusory energy. In other words, material existence has no essential reality. O Uddhava, both knowledge and ignorance, being products of Maya, are expansions of my potency. Both knowledge and ignorance are beginningless and perpetually award liberation and bondage to the embodied living beings. Most intelligent Uddhava, the living entity, called Jiva, is part and parcel of me, but due to ignorance, he has been suffering in material bondage since time immemorial. By knowledge, however, he can be liberated. Thus, my dear Uddhava, in the same material body we find opposing characteristics such as great happiness and misery. That is because both the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally liberated, as well as the conditioned soul, are within the body. I shall now speak to you about their different characteristics. By chance, two birds have made a nest together in the same tree. The two birds are friends and are of a similar nature. One of them, however, is eating the fruits of the tree, whereas the other, who does not eat the fruits, is in a superior position due to his potency. The bird who does not eat the fruits of the tree is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who by his omniscience perfectly understands his own position and that of the conditioned living entity, represented by the eating bird. That living entity, on the other hand, does not understand himself or the Lord. He is covered by ignorance and is thus called eternally conditioned, whereas the Personality of Godhead, being full of perfect knowledge, is eternally liberated. One who is enlightened in self-realization, although living within the material body, sees himself as transcendental to the body, just as one who has arisen from a dream gives up identification with the dream body. A foolish person, however, although not identical with his material body, but transcendental to it, thinks himself to be situated in the body, just as one who is dreaming sees himself as situated in an imaginary body. An enlightened person who is free from the contamination of material desire does not consider himself